17. A yet greater shock. I follow the silent procession to the funeral parlor, belonging to a family friend named Joe, who has offered its use without charge. Jess's body is laid to rest in a small room awaiting funeral plans. As it is the weekend and his death such a sudden shock, nothing is done other than place it in a cooler, which is closed, then the door to the place locked. Disconsolate, I stumble away alone. The hours pass. I hardly remember how. Everyone has scattered. I do not even know where the others are. Some, I think, are staying at Mary and Barney's house. Rumors are circulating that others of us could be arrested. But I am not so much afraid as in shock. I don't know what to do, what to think. Night arrives, and with it the sleepless agony of guilt and despair. Morning brings no relief. Another long day of misery follows. I see a few of our comrades coming and going in and out of the houses of friends. We share furtive glances, but are afraid to acknowledge one another openly. Another night. Sleep still contains no relief from the torment. Now the accusations are being hurled at me from within my own conscience. You denied him. You are a coward, come the tormenting voices. You lied to save your own skin. He loved you, and you repaid it by turning your back on him. You didn't stand up to help him or protect him. You might as well have pulled the trigger yourself. What little rest comes and goes is fitful and tormented. I have hardly slept in 3 days. My body is exhausted, my brain scorched into numbness. Again I wake. Another morning arrives, but it brings only reminders and a deepening of the waking nightmare that life has become. The sun is shining. I go out. The morning is quiet. Unconsciously, I find myself drawn in the direction of the funeral home. Perhaps, I think, there will be some news by now regarding the funeral. Suddenly, the ground convulses beneath me. An earthquake! It rumbles and quivers for 5 or 10 seconds, then gradually calms. A little shaken, I continue on. I draw close to the funeral home. Ahead I see 3 women running toward me. As they approach, I recognize 2 of the Marys and Joanna. I pause, thinking perhaps they are running from some danger caused by the earthquake and need help. But the expressions on their faces are of wonder and joy. They are shouting and waving, but I can scarcely make out a word. Before I have a chance to find out, I hear footsteps running from behind. I turn to see young John sprinting along the street toward me. Now come more people running. Everyone is shouting, filling the quiet morning with questions. What is wrong? Is a mass arrest underway? Are they rounding us all up? Is everyone trying to escape while they can? Is it true? Is it true? Shouts John. Yes, yes, John, Joanna yells back excitedly. Where are Pete and Jim? Behind me, answers John. They're coming. He dashes off in the direction of the funeral home. The women also hurry away. Bewildered, I begin to follow John. Soon I hear running steps behind me again. Once more I turn. This time it is Pete and Jim, both running hard but obviously tired. I pause to wait for them. What is it? What's happening? I ask as Pete runs up. Haven't you heard? He says. No. Heard what? They say the Lord is alive. alive!" I exclaim. "An angel appeared to some of the women," says Pete. "He told them he has risen." "But he was dead." "I know. I didn't believe it myself at first either. But Mary has actually seen him." "She's seen him? And talked to him? Yes, it's true. He's alive. Really alive." From Jesus, an Obedient Son by Michael Phillips, read by Michael Kimball. More information on this and similar writings may be found at fatherofthenklings.com. Visit Amazon to purchase Jesus, an Obedient Son, and other books by Michael Phillips.